The United States Senate moments ago approved a roughly $480 billion relief package that includes hundreds of billions of dollars in new funding for small businesses hurt by the coronavirus outbreak, along with other priorities like money for hospitals and expanding COVID-19 testing. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the bill, 12 days in the making, was worth the wait.
The legislation before us contains $220 billion more dollars, including funding for small businesses through community financial institutions, new funding for our hospitals and healthcare system, and a substantial down payment on a national testing regime so desperately needed and asked for by one and all. Let me repeat that. The legislation now includes an additional $220 billion, $120 billion for small businesses, $100 billion for our healthcare system, divided among healthcare providers, and a need for testing and contact tracing. The new money includes $50 billion in additional emergency small business loans and $10 billion in additional business grants. That includes $60 billion in new funding set aside for small lenders. If you don't know a banker, if you're not a relatively large-sized company, you were left out. Two out of three loans in New York were ignored by the mom-and-pops, the small businesses, the restaurants and the barbershops, the hardware stores, the butchers, and small startups, both service and manufacturing. They couldn't get in. Now they will be because of our work.
President urged the House and Senate to pass the legislation in a pair of tweets Tuesday afternoon. Mitch McConnell says nothing was in the bill that the GOP wouldn't have supported a week ago.
That it took our Democratic colleagues 12 days to agree to a deal that contains essentially nothing that Republicans ever opposed. In my view, it's indefensible that Main Street small businesses and their workers had their assistance cut off for partisan leverage. That was the word of choice for one leading House Democrat. Leverage. The American people cannot be political leverage. So I'm glad we're now poised to move ahead. Senate Republicans are prepared to pass the bill. It's my hope the entire Senate will be able to pass it as soon as possible, potentially as soon as just a few minutes. The American people cannot be political leverage. So I'm glad we're now poised to move ahead. Senate Republicans are prepared to pass the bill. It's my hope the entire Senate will be able to pass it as soon as possible, potentially as soon as just a few minutes from now.
And the Paycheck Protection Program allows small businesses to keep workers on the payroll and has aided some shops from going under completely amid the downturn. The House is expected to vote on the legislation Thursday if the Senate passes it today. Governor Andrew Cuomo gave his daily news briefing from Buffalo shortly before leaving for Washington to meet with President Trump. Last week, Cuomo and President Trump traded angry barbs over who was responsible for failures to meet needs in protective gear, ventilators, and testing supplies. Then the New York governor went on to describe his plans for a phased return to normalcy throughout the state.
So the federal government's right. The states should take the lead. Yes. Partnership, federal government, you have to help us with this national manufacturer and the supply list. After you do the testing, states have a second big task. Put together an army of tracers who then trace each person who tested positive, who did they contact, and then isolate those people who you contact. Also, talking about reopening, we're going to make reopening decisions on a regional basis based on that region's facts and circumstances about the COVID virus. In other words, just like some states will reopen before other states because they have a different circumstance when it comes to COVID and their status with COVID, it's also true across the state. North Country has a totally different situation than New York City. Central New York is a different situation. We operate as one state, but we also have to understand variations. And You do want to get this economy open as soon as possible. And if a situation is radically different in one part of the state than another part of the state, take that into consideration. And that's what we're going to be doing. So the same logic that applies to the country applies to some states, this state, where you have those varieties across the state. And we need to take that into consideration. So the way we've been working on the economy in general across the state, where we recognized there's one state, yes, but there are regional economies within the state, and we've been working with each individual regional economy, we'll do the same thing on this phase. Let's talk about reopening economies in that regional context and coordinate it regionally. And that's what we're going to be doing. And again, I've said this statewide, but I want all our regional partners to hear us. Let's not talk about just reopening. Let's not have gone all through this and all we're going to do is go back to where we were. How do you use this as an opportunity to learn the lessons and to build back better? That's what we have to do.
Meanwhile, New York State has paid about $2.2 billion in unemployment insurance benefits to 1.1 million New Yorkers since the COVID-19 outbreak began. Cuomo admitted that New York's unemployment website collapsed following the surge in claims after the state shuttered non-essential businesses, putting a record number of New Yorkers out of work. But he said no one will miss a payment they were entitled to receive.
The bad news is there were so many unemployment claims that it has collapsed the unemployment department's system, their website system, their phone system. We have 1,000 people who are now working on that unemployment website and phone call system. I mean, it's unbelievable. 1,000 people just to take the incoming unemployment calls. That's how high the volume is. And they still can't keep up with the volume. And there's nothing worse than being unemployed and nervous about a paycheck, and then you call for unemployment benefits and you can't get through on the phone. I get it. And we have 1,000 people working on it. We have Google working on it. We have all these experts working on it. But they're trying to bring up a system, again, that did a much, much lower capacity. This is 100 times whatever we've ever done before. The good news is this. You're going to get the same benefit anyway. It's not like it's costing you money, right? I know it's frustrating, but once you qualify, the qualification is retroactive, so you're going to get the same benefit. It's not costing you any money. It's not that because you couldn't make the call today, it means you're not going to get the benefit. You will get the benefit. It's just an annoying delay. And believe me, people are working 7 days a week on it.
There's still a backlog of 4,305 phone applications, but that's down from 275,000 before April 8th. And in more national news, New York Attorney General Letitia James today led a multi-state coalition of 18 attorneys general in seeking to stop the state of Alabama from banning almost all abortions in the state, claiming the coronavirus disease has caused a public health crisis and made abortions non-essential procedures. Alabama's efforts to ban abortion and use the coronavirus as an excuse to strip women of their constitutional rights will not go unchallenged, said Attorney General James. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Wednesday is the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, but for the first time, the celebrations will take place virtually on the Internet. Millions were expected to fill parks, stadiums, and plazas around the world. But with social distancing requirements in place because of the COVID epidemic, the rally will be online or on the radio with WBAI's special programming to mark the day. Although there's no direct link that's been found behind the coronavirus, linking the coronavirus with climate change, many experts say if the environment keeps changing at a rapid pace from human-caused pollution, the pandemic may be just a preview. In New York, advocates, community organizers, and elected officials will participate in an online forum to call for a green stimulus plan. Organizers say they would create thousands of good jobs to drive New York City's economic recovery from COVID-19. Among the participants was Adrian Devaney, Energy and Environmental Policy Legislative Assistant to Senator Schumer. He described the contentious negotiations that led to the bill, adding future bills will focus on reconstruction.
The Republicans in the Senate really just wanted to throw more money at the existing program. What we were able to secure in this new version is going to be a dedicated large pot of money that goes through smaller lenders and community-based financial institutions so that it can really target minority and other underserved businesses that really were meant to be the focus of the Paycheck Protection Program in the first round, but really got not a lot of the resources. The second big piece of this package is about the healthcare system and just the need for a lot more testing of people and getting those testing resources, particularly to states like New York, where there's a lot of need, and just more funding to the hospitals for personal protective equipment and frontline workers as well. So this is a pretty narrow package. It's not yet about economic recovery. It's just addressing some of the more immediate needs. Over the next few weeks, we're certainly going to be turning to a broader economic recovery package and would love to keep getting more ideas from all of you. And we're very interested in an economic recovery package that can put us in a better place at the end of all of this crisis than when we started. Climate is a really important priority for the leader. So we are looking at a lot of different types of ideas that could both help address the sectors of the economy that have been hardest hit by this crisis, but also make investments that can reduce emissions across the board in the transportation system, infrastructure broadly, and manufacturing, and in the energy system, and all the rest. Would love to continue a dialogue with you all about your ideas, and we're very much in the idea collection mode.
But City Council member Helen Rosenthal says the new stimulus bill, which goes to the House before getting Trump's signature, doesn't go far enough.
The money we're getting from the federal government isn't good enough. It's just not. The fact that on FEMA, the city has to pay 25% of every reimbursed dollar from the federal government for emergency management is outrageous. Mm-hmm. When we're telling our homeless shelters that their essential workers are going to get the coverage that they need and those shelters are going to get the food they need, the way the federal government has set it up right now, the city has to pay 25 cents on every dollar. That is outrageous, and it's on the Congress to fix that. In addition to that, given New York City's shortfall of $7.5 billion in revenue, we need Congress to get us local aid, just flat out cash, in order for the city to keep doing the good work it's doing. Otherwise, we're a mess. And I'm pushing very hard for city government and frankly for nonprofit providers to just do the work and build the city. And if our congressional delegation can't get us that money to pay for those services, we're going to go broke. And you know what? We're going to have to live with the consequences. But what we can't do is leave people hungry. And that's what's happening now without federal support.
And that's City Council member Helen Rosenthal. But Devaney added, it's just the beginning, and New York's needs will be addressed in the fourth stimulus bill.
We 100% agree on the need for state and local government grants. That's a huge priority. We have been pushing really hard for that, and we're able to secure a commitment to include that in the fourth package that we're working on. President Trump actually tweeted that out this morning. So we definitely agree that that's a huge need. And then on the FEMA cost share, that's another huge priority. And in fact, that'll be in this next package getting announced today, 100% cost share to lift that burden that was mentioned previously. It's such a huge burden right now, in particular, putting a strain on state and local governments. So that cost share will go away, and it'll be 100% covered by the federal government. Keep sending in those concerns and those questions, because it really does make an impact and it sets what our priorities are when we're negotiating these bills.
And that's Adrian Devaney. He's the Energy and Environmental Policy Legislative Assistant for Senator Chuck Schumer. A major goal of the Green Stimulus Plan is to create thousands of good union jobs as quickly as possible so that frontline communities not only recover from the current crisis, but also thrive in a more equitable and resilient New York, even as climate activists clamor to be heard. Some see a bright side to the social distancing that sent millions indoors and caused a collapse in the price of oil. One Irish journalist went so far as to say the pandemic is doing the work of climate activist Greta Thunberg. Satellite maps show a tremendous reduction in air pollution worldwide, although scientists caution the measurements done from above don't accurately measure pollution levels on the planet's surface. In New York City, researchers from Columbia University say the reduction of traffic on New York City's streets has lowered levels of some pollutants by as much as 50%. Today, the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance published its report, Climate Justice, A Critical Decade for Climate Equity and Health. They lay out a plan for recovery from the pandemic that also addresses environmental justice. Executive Director of the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance is Eddie Bautista.
The passage of congestion pricing, whether it's the implementation of the new New York State Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, as well as looking at other initiatives that the city and state have not embarked on, that we're encouraging them to do so. It tries to identify the overlaps between the COVID-19 disproportionate vulnerabilities our communities face and how that kind of aligns with the environmental injustices that our communities have endured for decades. Those vulnerabilities play out in COVID the way they do for climate change. Our reports try to focus on how we both recover from the economic hit our society's taken, as well as a lot of the kind of health and environmental and climate policies we need to make our communities less vulnerable to future pandemics.
Highlight one or two of the top ideas you have.
We have to find ways of prioritizing testing where the disparities are highest, right? Like the Bronx has literally double the death rate of COVID cases than the rest of the city. As we're expanding testing, do so in a way that tracks the disproportionality of it. But in other environmental and climate, for example, on solid waste issues, we still have a solid waste management plan that has not been fully implemented. We have a marine transfer station on the west side of Manhattan that could be reducing truck traffic that's bringing Manhattan recyclables to the Bronx. Unlike other crises, this is one of those, climate change, that we can literally build our way out of. So, for example, last year the city passed a local law that on its face tends to get at the largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the city, which are our building. Our built environment generates something like 68 to 70% of the city's entire carbon footprint. What the law had were some loopholes that could really undermine the goals of that law. If the idea is to try to maximize New York City's commitment to reduce our greenhouse gases by 80% by 2050, you don't do that by inserting a bunch of loopholes in a law that's intended to push for the retrofits of buildings. You don't allow, as the law appears to do, the purchase of unlimited renewable energy credits in place of actually doing the retrofits to the buildings to reduce your particular building's carbon footprint emissions. There's another loophole in the bill, basically commodifying building emissions and developing a trading mechanism so that building owners could trade emissions. It's almost like carbon trading, right? Carbon trading for buildings. Cap and trade is a failed solution. It's not a solution that reduces emissions. And in fact, when you look at a cap and trade system for buildings, that doesn't exist anywhere in the United States.
What do you think of these big projects to build up, to raise 10, 15, 20 feet to the east side, to build dams across the bay, to try and stop storm surges from coming into the city? Environmentalists set against public housing residents, things like that. What do you see in all that?
We did not and do not support the idea of constructing a seawall, because we've often wondered what happens if you're at the tail end of these walls and there's a storm surge. Are you merely just displacing the wave and the surge energy to communities that are not behind that wall? And again, it speaks to this crazy administration's fixation with walls. What happened last month was the Army Corps of Engineers suspended its entire approach. The unfortunate thing, by dropping the study, the seawall bites the dust in a way, but there were also a lot of other interventions that were positive. We've been long advocates of the need for integrated coastal resiliency and integrated coastal protection that includes green infrastructure and natural environmental interventions that could reduce the energy and the impacts from storm surges. When it comes to the Lower East Side specifically, if and when the city gears up for Lower Manhattan construction to reduce, again, storm surge vulnerabilities, that they do so in a way that doesn't just prioritize Wall Street and that part of Lower Manhattan, but does so in a way that protects the public housing residents in Lower Manhattan. I think the Lower East Side disagreement over its what the city was intending for its waterfront and specifically its park, that disagreement is something that I would hope folks in the Lower East Side could come to some common understanding in, that when community reaches a united front in terms of how to deal with its resiliency challenges, that's how you get the city to partner with them in a way that advances these goals. We're facing right now unprecedented challenges across the board. And what's important for all of us is to remember our response to COVID-19 is a response that if we do not factor in the disproportionality of vulnerabilities that we face as a society, we're going to be doomed to repeat those vulnerabilities for the next pandemic. And it's important that we don't just rely on austerity budgets to get us there. We can create a lot of jobs with that. Those kind of interventions will make for more resilient communities. And more resilient communities can therefore beat back or at least resist future crises like pandemics that we can't even predict at this point.
Eddie Bautista is executive director of the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance. And governors of about half a dozen U.S. states pushed ahead on Tuesday with plans to partially reopen for business, despite warnings by some health officials that doing so prematurely could trigger a surge of coronavirus cases. The easing of sweeping restrictions in Georgia, South Carolina, and two other states follows protests in Michigan, Pennsylvania, California, and elsewhere to ease rules imposed during the pandemic that shut down businesses and largely confined residents to their homes. A Reuters opinion poll released on Tuesday showed that a majority of Americans believe that stay-at-home orders should remain in place until public health officials determine that lifting them is safe, despite the damage to the U.S. economy. Georgia has shown 7 days of declining cases, according to state figures, half of the 14 days recommended by federal guidelines. Nationwide, nearly 45,000 people have been killed by COVID-19, the respiratory illness caused by coronavirus, and more than 800,000 people have tested positive for the disease. In harder-hit states, tensions between President Donald Trump, a Republican, and local officials have risen over the U.S. government's role in ramping up testing, which infectious disease experts say is a necessary step in enabling safe reopening. And finally, Spain called off the running of the Bulls in July. The U.S. scrapped the national spelling bee in June, and Germany canceled Oktoberfest 5 months away, making it clear Tuesday that the effort to beat back the coronavirus and return to normal could be a long and dispiriting process. Meanwhile, top diplomats from China, where the virus first began to spread, officially handed over a donation of medical supplies to hard-hit New York City on Tuesday, while also indirectly sending a message to President Trump to stop criticizing the Asian nation over its handling of the pandemic. Amid growing impatience over the shutdowns that have thrown tens of millions out of work, European countries continue to reopen in stages, while in the U.S., one state after another, mostly ones led by Republican governors, began taking steps to get back to business. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.